Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for Friday Morning GM with my co-host, Voss Ricos. Voss, how you doing?
Life is good, Ken. Life is very good. Entering a little bit of the slow portion of the NFL calendar. We do have the schedule release later this month and some more camps and mandatory camps and OTAs. Eric DaCosta continues making moves. I think the one he made recently was a tremendous one.
Yeah, so we got a little bit of excitement, a little bit of less excitement with that other move. But Calais Campbell is a Raven again. Will play his 19th season at age 40. He's been an incredible Iron Man. Played 524 snaps of defense last year, and another 144 more on special teams. That's an unbelievable 39 total snaps per game. The man played at age 39.
Yeah, between him and Derrick Henry, they're really bending the curve of the age curve there. I think it's really a perfect addition from every angle. I think the fact that he's a three tech is preferable to Reader, who would have been more of a nose tackle. Mm-hmm. He also has the ability to play five. He can play on the edge, highly productive, even in his 39-year season against the run and the pass. And then there's also some intangibles that I think he brings to the table as well.
Yeah, for sure. He's a guy who, is a great leader, a very natural player that the others gravitate to, and they'll seek his advice, no doubt. I think that flexibility to play almost anywhere along the line may be an added hidden bonus. And I do think it's not really a great thing that you're depending on. Your flexibility hinges on the health of a 40-year-old player. But he could literally can play anywhere from nose to seven, and maybe even nine. If you can help you out at edge, it could end up being an economy of positions that you get out of the deal, because he's a guy who can. Maybe it means you keep five total down linemen, including him, and then four total edges, including him. I hope the Ravens do not go that route, but it is a potential economy they get from a Calais signing.
I'd like to see 10 total, five and five, or it could be six and four, maybe. Maybe that's the economy. But I do think you need 10 there. I would say it lessens the need to add a luxury edge. Wouldn't be opposed to it. You want to build up that common waves pass rush with a Clowney or a Van Noy potentially, or even Bosa, depending on the price. That would be fine by me, but I don't think you need to. I think you can walk into week one and the defense is in good place with some depth options, some injury insurance. I mean, off the bat, Calais has injury insurance for Madubuike. That's a big part of it.
Terrific. Absolutely true. And the Ravens are very lucky to have him. I do think that a player like Clowney could very well make sense. And I think actually – maybe it's not a matter of not getting another edge. It's a matter of the Ravens can totally shop with price and value being the primary competing factors and choose their point on that efficient frontier to get a player of their choosing. It might be Van Noy is the guy, because, hey, he could do some things that'll help you in terms of being a Sam linebacker the Ravens don't really have a lot of right now. It could be that Clowney is the guy because they want a more of a top-end pass rusher that they are bringing in. And it could be that Bosa is the guy, although I kind of see him as being a higher-priced alternative and a less of a likely fit with the Ravens than some others. But, the fact they had interest there, at least for some period of time, seemed to be public.
Yeah, I'm not. You could maybe make an offer to all three the same number and say whoever takes it first gets the job. But just circling back to Calais's intangibles, 40 years old, has never won the Super Bowl. So I think that is an intangible. The motivation to get over that hump that he's going to bring to the locker room should be beneficial. We remember the 2000 Super Bowl run where Tony Siragusa was, the day of the Super Bowl, putting motivational messages in the teammates' lockers to help. The other thing, though, is definitely the leadership with some of the younger players on the roster, especially the front five guys. Zion Young, who is a big personality, who better to mentor him than Calais Campbell? Yeah. Mike Green, Rashawn Benny, who apparently had some off-the-field stuff. Again, he's the Walter Payton man of the year pedigree. So, and even Tavius Robinson and Aneas Peebles, I think it's really going to be beneficial to all of the young players in the front.
Right. They've certainly set themselves up for some camp battles, which I think we're going to handle on the next show, by the way, or maybe even a show closer to camp, because we really do want to talk through some of those and give them more due. But it will be interesting, because I think Peebles is directly in competition with Rayshon Benny for one spot that's available on the team. I think that, you know, potentially Okoye is now not looking like he's in great position to make the team with the acquisition of Campbell. I think the Ravens have kind of identified their five guys, even if one of them is a competition between two of the three techs.
Yeah, it's going to be a good competition on the D-line for sure. It may give you the luxury of putting Madubuike on PUP or having him start the season on IR so that he can lighten the load and give him more time, because he did just have the surgery recently, the second surgery. So it's a good spot to be. You want competition. You want talented players. You want a variety of skill sets, and I think they've accomplished that.
Yeah, it's a real good point about PUP. The Ravens have a long history of kind of exploiting PUP to deliver midseason replacements for themselves, and oftentimes it's been on defense that they've done it. But injuries occur. Having a cornerback coming off PUP halfway through the season has not been a bad thing. Having a defensive lineman coming off PUP at that point is not a bad thing either, so the Ravens might do that. Let's move on, talk about another player who's acquired, Skylar Thompson, a quarterback, originally a Miami Dolphin. Let's see, he played some in 22 and some in 24 or 25, I believe. Hold on, let me get that right. Yeah, some in 22, some in 24. Started three total career games and played in 10. There's nothing to like about his career record in terms of what he's done. He's got a 66 career quarterback rating, for example. But the Ravens, in their infinite wisdom, chose that, you know, he would be a guy to come in and I assume compete for a third quarterback spot with the two undrafted rookies.
I could see him competing for a spot. I do think ultimately there's going to be two quarterbacks on the 53. Right. He does have some experience. I do think they want to evaluate the receivers, and it's hard to evaluate the receivers if the quarterbacks are not delivering them catchable balls. And you don't want Lamar taking too many snaps, although he's been much more involved this OTAs compared to previous years. And Huntley doesn't have the greatest arm either. So, you know, I think it's a depth move. Jesse Minter said some we're going to have somewhere between three and five QBs in camp, and that's looks like they might have five, or maybe they let one of the UDFAs go. So that's really all I see. I don't think it's – just to mention, they released the UDFA right tackle Sylvester to make room for Thompson. And then, according to Brian McFarland, they put Okoye back on IPP, and so with – and – with adding Calais, they still have one spot open at the moment.
Okay, I don't think that IPPP creates a 90-man roster. That's an interesting comment from Brian, but I think that it doesn't create a 90, it doesn't create a 53, it does create an additional practice squad spot. So if Brian is saying he's almost always right about these kind of nuances to cap and roster things, I'm going to talk to him about it. It may be that they changed the rule. And, you know, we don't know about that, but that'd be interesting to
I vaguely remember now from last year thinking that it allowed you to have 91, but I could be mistaken.
Okay.
Regardless though, Brian is saying one open spot. So that's interesting.
Very good.
And they only let go of one guy after rookie mini camp, which is maybe a little bit interesting too.
They only let go of one of the UDFAs. Yes. All right. Right. They had a whole bunch of tryout players there who aren't coming back, which really means their tryout players were basically none panned out. They panned for a little gold. They might try and find somebody. Last year, Nash Hutmaker ended up being a tryout player and didn't work out. So anyway, we'll get to some camp stuff a little bit later, but I think the position of greatest need right now, I think we both agree when we talk about it, is probably center and not edge rusher. And you know, the Ravens have a bunch of options. Most of them are below the line, but I haven't done a single show to talk about these, you know, in any kind of detail. So I thought we'd just do that here and just go through these guys and maybe we can kind of Delphi this a little bit, but each come up with a percentage chance that each of these works out. And when I say works out, it gives you a player who is in the middle third, I'm going to say, of PFF grading as a pass blocker. I don't even care about the run blocking. I really almost don't care. I mean, as a pass blocker, that's what I want.
Okay. In preparation for the show, I put a percentage chance they end up as a starter. Is the way I
okay? That's fine. That's fine too. That's we can go with that, and okay. then we don't have to be judging, you know, their level of play after it. All right. Then I've got to think about what's the percentage chance of each of these. You use the same six or seven guys that I sent you, right?
The six, and then I added one to be acquired.
That would be the seventh. Okay. All right.
While you do that, I'll give a little preface on my thoughts on center. I don't think you need an all-pro center, and it's probably sacrilegious to say that after the struggles that the Ravens had on the interior of the offensive line last year, but it's traditionally not been a position where you need a really, really high-end guy to have a great offense or a championship offense. Mike Flynn was a good, not great center. Skura and McCary in 2019 were part of a historic record-setting offense. Both those guys were UDFAs. And then what I don't want is a center that's getting bull rushed into Lamar's lap and he can't hold up to the bull rush like Jeremy Zuta. So I think if you can avoid that and you can get decent play, the rest of the components on the offense can elevate the whole group to be a very championship caliber.
Okay. And I'm with you. They certainly got by with Mike Flynn. Jeff Mitchell, I thought was a pretty good player, but you know, he certainly to put Casey Raback. They've had a number of guys who've been solid centers and gone on to play pretty well other places. Raback in particular.
Jason Brown.
He was around. He was good. I want to say he was with the Jets after the Ravens, but maybe I'm wrong.
Who was it? Raback?
Yeah, Casey Raback.
He went to the Redskins, I think.
Redskins. Okay, right. And that was Chester also went to the Redskins and had a fine career after he left the team. That was just a case of they had one too many good linemen to keep.
But they developed some other good ones too. I mean, Ryan Jensen went on to become, I think, mm-hmm. at least a Pro Bowl, if not an All-Pro, got a big contract in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And then Jason Brown, now he was a little bit higher draft pedigree, I believe, but he got a big contract with the Rams too, and they
just
let him go.
Didn't work out there. And they certainly had other guys too. But let's go through these guys one at a time, and we'll talk through them. The guy who might be number one right now, and we really don't know, but they gave Danny Pinter some guaranteed money. And that is the biggest commitment they've made, in a sense, to any of these guys. Really, literally to any of these guys. Now, Pinter will be 30 in June. He has no good history as a pass blocker. He is average size. He's about 301, 305, somewhere in there, with short arms, under 32 inches. He's got 898 career snaps. And of course, he's a UDFA after this season. So there's not a long-term, you know, option on this guy they have. It's the sand in the hourglass is immediately running out as soon as the signing comes. It is more than a market value signing when I look at this contract. So that's the one thing that kind of points to me that they like something about Danny Pinter.
I think there's two ways to look at these kind of overpays or potentially overdrafts, if you want to potentially talk about, not that we're going to go into the day three tight ends, but do they really like something, or were they forced into desperation by the thinning of the herd at those positions? Sure. So that's a potential thing. I'm not excited about Pinter at all. I really hope he's a camp body for all the things you've mentioned. And really, to me, the size, I can deal with a guy that's not quick footed and getting to level two. I just don't want a guy that's getting bull rushed back into the quarterback. Yeah. So for me, I had him as one of the lower potential starters. I had him only down to 5%.
Okay. I think, unfortunately, the chance is about 20, and I'm going largely off the contract, but also the timing of the contract was, I believe, after Ledford arrived. And if that's true, then Ledford had some probable say into, yeah, I can work with that guy. Mm-hmm. I've seen tape of him. And that, you know, the note I have in here is I just hope he's not the first choice. And unfortunately, of the guys on the roster, I think he probably has the best chance to be the starting center on opening day. And that's really scary. But we'll go through the rest of these. There's not a whole lot of difference between them. The next one, Corey Bullock, 13 snaps in 2025. Three of those came at center. 135 good preseason snaps over 2 years. He's got one holding call, is the only major blemish over that period of time. The big thing about Corey Bullock is size. He's 6'4", 331, or he was when he came out of college, I guess that is. Has 32-inch arms, which is not special, and a lot of the Ravens centers suffer from the lack of arm length there. But he's in the second year, and as a second-year player, the Ravens have a significant option on the future play of Corey Bullock in the form of an ERFA next year and an RFA the year after if he works out. So while I don't know the chance of him, but this is, you know, we come up with an interesting, the percentage chance of being a starter. I'm using the opening day starter because mine have to sum to 100. If you say at any time during the season, Bullock could easily
no.
over for Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I'm doing it the same way. Yeah. I'm doing it the same way. Sum to 100. So he, in my view, is the front runner at 30%. So I think there's a few things to consider. A, he was blocked by Linderbaum last year. For all we know, they really, really liked him, but they had who is now the highest paid center in the history of the game, Linderbaum, ahead of him. So they didn't necessarily think he could help at guard, but they might have really liked him. And the second thing was DaCosta's comments post-draft about how he didn't think that some of the centers that we had as fourth-round grades who got drafted in the fifth round or whatever, he didn't think they would have been upgrades. I forget the exact terminology, but upgrades or instant impact. I think that was telling that he likes Bullock. So I think that there's a pretty strong chance. I do. Maybe this is hopium. I'm not sure. You know, I wasn't out there at all the practices like you have been, but I'm much more optimistic on Bullock compared to Pinter.
Okay. Well, I'm optimistic too. At least I consider myself optimistic, but I still think he's clearly behind Pinter given the money and the situation. And they're not drafting guys. I have him at 15 instead with Pinter at 20. So we've got kind of a little bit of a reverse between those two. That's okay. I like to show that texture. Let's move on. Talk about Jovan Gwynn. He came with Ledford from Atlanta. I think that's probably the biggest asset in his column. He doesn't have a lot else. He's smallish, 6'2", 301, 31.75 inch arms. They're all around the same. They're all just under 32 inches. He did do 34 bench reps coming out of school. I think that was at the pro day. Shorter arms help with that, but still 34 bench reps is outstanding. I mean, if it was a difference between 24 and 27 or 28 bench reps, then I'd say the arm length maybe would make that not much of a difference. But in this case, that's an outstanding total. He has just 11 career snaps. They all came in 2025, and he's 27 years old. And this is really important. Even though he's only played the 11 snaps last year, his first 2 years counted. I guess he was on IR maybe. And so he doesn't, he only has this year under contract, and then he'll be a free agent. So Ravens hold no option on his future value.
Right. Again, a small guy, as you mentioned, I have him at 10%, slightly above Pinter, because I think Ledford's firsthand knowledge of Gwynn might be more valuable than what he saw on tape with Pinter. So I still have three options that we haven't got to higher than him, but you know, we'll see. I think he might be a good depth guy, you know, but just because he has that experience with Ledford.
Yeah, he could certainly be that. He could be sixth offensive lineman. There's a lot of things he could do. I have him at 5%. I think that I don't think there's anything with a 27-year-old with you know the option value not being there that they need to say, yeah, let's give the job to him. They've got to say, okay, there's no other better alternative. Gwynn is our guy then. That's really what has to happen. And I really hope that doesn't happen. So anyway, we are where we are. All right, let's move on. The next one is Emory Jones. Now, this is an interesting one because we didn't know about this beforehand, but there has been talk that Emory Jones is going to take snaps at center. I don't even remember where that was reported first. Or whether it came from DaCosta or whatever. I don't think I've heard it DaCosta actually say it.
Maybe Zarebek might have floated that.
Maybe. I wonder from who is really the question. If he said sources inside the Ravens or whatever, that's fine. But I don't know who is the guy behind saying this. It seems like a fairly remote possibility for me. They really need Emory Jones to effectively play three positions for them. He's the right guard and right tackle backup under the current thing. I mean, Ioane obviously is a starting right guard, and they're not even, I don't think they're even pretending that there's a competition or B, some sort of struggle between who plays left guard, right guard. I think they've made their call, and Ioane will be the starting right guard. And then you know, beyond that, Emory Jones is needed for both right guard and right tackle to be a backup. Carson Vinson is not an ideal backup on the right side. He's an agility and footwork guy, tremendous size, vertical build, not your typical right tackle. You want him defending the blind side. Mm-hmm. I think it's Jones at right tackle who would step in. And honestly, it's kind of perfect in a way to have a guard tackle for game day activations. So you have four tackles and you have five interior guys with Jones being able to play either.
That's very good points, Ken. I definitely see the logic behind that thought. I do think you might have a little bit of something with Diego Pounds if he works out a tackle. Mm-hmm. So to me, the thought behind thinking Jones can transition to center, which we've seen tackles do before, is that how can you put your best five on the field? So that's really would be the argument. He's probably a more talented physical specimen than anybody else on this list. So I have him at 25%. That might be a little bit high, as you said. So I wish there was a way. I am sort of rooting for him to get the job, to be honest. And then maybe you figure out something else as far as backup on the right side.
Okay. All right, I'm at 5 on Jones. I think that it just the current roster composition, it makes much more sense for him to be playing a different position. But McCary could play some center and be a tackle backup for the Ravens. So it's just not like it's out of the realm of Ravens history or rationality that Jones could try and do both. I just think it's a little bit less likely. And I didn't mention 6th offensive lineman, did I? Because he had some snaps at that. Okay.
No, but I certainly agree with you there. We discussed that, I think, last time.
Okay, let's go into the next one, which is one of the real interesting ones. Nick Dawkins, UDFA, signed almost right away after the thing. What that tells me is they probably had a handshake agreement with him to be a UDFA that was in place, you know, before the draft. And a few things about him. First of all, he's penalized a lot in college. Every 147.2 snaps is a lot for a center. You know, when a tackle is flagged at that rate, you can live with it. Maybe when a guard is flagged at that rate, you'd be concerned. And obviously you get a significantly more even from a player like Simpson. But he's decent size because kind of a vertical build at 6'4", 305, and has 34 inch arms. It is reported. Now that was a pro day measurement. I have no idea. No like single source evaluation of that I really trust. But I would guess that his arms are probably longer than the other guys in the center group, with the exception of Emory Jones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, intriguing UDFA for sure. One of the better, higher-ranked centers as far as on, you know, Dane Brugler's board and some of the other boards. A lot of experience, and also Ioane's teammate. So he does seem like he was a priority UDFA ad. I could see him taking the job, I guess. Mm-hmm. I gave him 10% as to be the week one starter. So, you know, for what it's worth, 10%. But I do think maybe he's a guy with some developmental upside long term.
Okay, so I said 15%. I did have a couple other things about him. He apparently has a weightlifting background, had a 355-pound power clean. That's a significant amount of weight for that. So that's an impressive number. And I didn't see a bench number for him. But, you know, you want strength in various ways. More than that, you want lower body gourd-like pear-shaped build to be able to low center of gravity for a player playing on the inside, and he doesn't really have that, so we'll see. And obviously, you know, having just had the experience with Voorhees, a very vertical build guy with a higher center of gravity guy who has trouble staying low and really using that strength, you know, we see problems with that. PFF graded him well as a pass blocker, not particularly good as a run blocker. Perfect. That's exactly what I want.
Right.
If you're going to have a disparity in one direction, give me that. You know, it's interesting because the last guy we're going to talk about is Bjornsson. And Bjornsson, they felt the need to draft. And Dawkins, they said, no problem. We'll get him as a UDFA. It just kind of tells me that Bjornsson is a guy that maybe wasn't willing to commit with them by handshake agreement. And so they expended the draft pick to avoid a priority UDFA pick. But it kind of a strange
pick. It was kind of an off the wall pick. Maybe like a McGuard, you know, I don't know. With that age, it was just a little bit of a strange pick. I don't have too much to add on Bjornsson. I have him at 5% to win the starting center job in week one.
Okay. I have him at 10. Bjornsson spent 7 years in college. He'll be 26 in September. He played 1 year at Northwestern after six at South Dakota State. That includes a year where he sat out via for COVID and also played on two FCS national championship teams at South Dakota State. So context is a significant issue for him, and context and age both, because obviously if he's playing at 25 in the Big Ten, it's a lot different from playing at 22 in the Big Ten or 21 in the Big Ten and really, you know, showing it off. He did have 52 snaps at center in 2020. That is a lifetime ago in a lot of ways. But 3,000.
There's children in preschool that weren't born by it. They weren't born then.
That's right. We got to find the youngest player and what it, you know, he might have been a freshman in high school at about that time. You know, kind of anyway, he's going to take a lot of abuse this summer for his age, no matter what. That's just the way it's going to work. I wonder if they'll put him at the podium at some point and we'll get a chance to ask him some questions. But, interesting. Usually they don't do that with the guys who are like rookies on the edge of the roster competing for a spot. They don't usually, you know, put them on the podium.
Right. Right. I mean, maybe he brings some stability with his track record. He should be more of a floor raiser. So the last option for me to be acquired, and that I had it 15%. There are some Garrett Bradbury's been discussed, because the Bears selected Logan Jones early. There's also Jackson Powers Johnson, I believe, who's with the Raiders, who they paid for Linderbaum. I think a lot of people think that's very likely. I don't see it, because I think the other GMs are going to make EDC pay through the nose to get a center, because they know that that the Ravens need one.
Okay, so I'm looking at a broader set of others there, but I have it at 30%. I think it's the most likely shot on the entire board. It's a plurality win over every other individual player that the Ravens currently have. Is they go out and they find somebody else somehow. Now here's some possibilities. Number one is they don't get a center, but they get Kevin Zeitler and ask him to play center. That's a possibility, right?
Sure.
They go out and find another guy who's at guard, was serviceable there. They try and make him a center, throw him in the mix in camp with a bunch of other players. I think that's a possibility. I think it is a possibility. If they got Jackson Powers Johnson, if I'm the Raiders, I'm immediately have a certain distaste for that trade directly. First of all, because the Ravens just boned you on the Crosby deal. But second of all, because it's like a direct competition trade where they acquired the Ravens Pro Bowl center. And if the Ravens suddenly, you know, turn JPJ into a productive NFL lineman, let alone a Pro Bowler or something. I mean, if JPJ were suddenly, you know, he had that kind of pedigree coming out of college.
Right.
If he was to become a star lineman under the Ravens tutelage, oh boy, would that look like crap for the Raiders. So I don't think they're going to want to make that trade, but I think there's a price at which even the Raiders couldn't object. I mean, if there was a, you know, fifth round pick offered for JPJ, I think they'd probably do it.
And there's a couple free agents still too. The guy from the Browns, Poshet, I believe is still available. So to summarize, Bullock was my top choice at 30, Henry Jones at 25.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
To be acquired at 15, Dawkins at 10, Gwynn at 10, Pinter and Bjornstad at 5 each.
Okay. And I'll go through my list again. Is other at 30, Pinter at 20. I don't like it, but that's how I see it right now. Bullock at 15, Dawkins at 15 also, Bjornstad at 10, and Gwynn and Jones both 5. I just don't think those really make sense. So a little bit of texture. You know, we normally there's some sort of Delphi-ing going on or whatnot, but I understand your logic, and I come up with it a little bit different in terms of how I do it.
Likewise.
All right, my friend, let's move on. Talk a little bit about rookie camp. There's not a ton to talk about, but the Skylar Thompson thing, I thought that Pavia and Fagnano, who got most of the attention, I would say, at rookie camp. The wide receivers did too, but the two quarterbacks probably had the most questions asked about them. So clearly people were working on their Pavia stories. little bit of a Johnny Manziel type character throwing money at strippers in a Mexico City strip club. I think that's where it was, right?
I don't recall quite the. I'm not too much into the gossip stuff, but yeah, he's definitely a character.
he was mentioned by Minter as being a player who had already had some learning moments, and I think he's really talking about the off the field stuff. I don't think he's talking about the on the field stuff. I looked at him on the field, and I'd say you got a guy who throws pretty well on the move. But if I'm looking at Fagnano and him and how they throw the football, Fagnano throws with a really tight spiral, and Pavia throws a very wobbly ball. And I'm immediately turned off by that. Pavia has, you know, a fair amount of success in a Power Five conference that you have to forget the Power Five conference. He played at Vanderbilt, right, in the SEC. So that's an SEC in the SEC. There's no higher pedigree he can come with in some sense. And yet I'm not really excited about him.
Yeah, he seems like just to be a training camp story for the reporters that are desperate for content this time of year to write about. I guess a little bit interesting that they would take a swing on a personality like that. And then also with Zion Young, I'm not sure the previous regime would have done that. So I do think it might be a sign that Minter is slightly different than his predecessor.
There are a lot of reporters, honestly, they want to write about, you know, what the quotes are, and they want to write about, you know, sometimes other people's questions, and they don't have the, anyway, I don't want to go into this, but watch the field. There's all kinds of information there. There's all sorts of information there being given to you willy nilly, you know, by what's out there. There's so much. So anyway,
I had a press pass back in 19, actually. And I had the same thought that there were more. Anyway, it was just, let's find what can we generate clickbait with. And then I would sit there and take diligent notes about what I was only on the field. I would go to the other side, to the second field where the reporters weren't, to look at that field so I could get more information. But anyway, I agree with you.
All right. In addition to those two, we had Lane and Surratt on the field. And there was some decent video. I have a visual memory because I had exactly the same angle that this video was written from, but it, you know, Lane going up to the football is something we've seen there. Seems to be a very natural leaper. I had positive things to, you know, about that. He did drop a ball. Surratt, much more natural cornerer, gets around the pylons. That's all we've seen so far, pylons. And we haven't seen any sales jobs at the top of the stem yet. So there's no, you know, one-on-one coverage so far in camp, but I like that. I think it's going to be an interesting three-way battle for playing time with those two and Walker to see who can get on the field and to see if the three of them as a group can increase the amount of reliance on 11 personnel from where it's been in past years, because there's an extra half of a snap per play of eligible receivers available, and you know, somebody's got to take it.
That's something I've been pining for a long time. I think Lamar can really excel with more spread formations, so there's not so much congestion in the box. The Lane pick has really grown on me since the draft stream, where I was pretty down on it. The more I see, the more I think about it. It's got a lot of upside, and I think Bateman might have to compete for some snaps. If he doesn't improve upon his showing from last year, he might be in competition for snaps as well.
That might be, by the way, part of the reason why they doubled up there is they don't like something attitudinally about Bateman. Bateman's an awfully talented man. He really has legitimate NFL talent, and they unlocked it in 24, and Lamar and him had a great connection. He didn't do as well with Lamar having an injury plagued season. He was one of the players who was more or less hurt by it, I would say, because he really benefited from extended plays and being able to get loose. And Lamar just wasn't able to generate as many of those with the injuries. Again, not blaming Lamar. I always have to say this because there's always people who say, why are you blaming Lamar for everything? Right. It's just the way it rolled out.
Yeah, I certainly don't think you're blaming Lamar. Bateman had some drops. He had a couple of routes that he appeared to give up on last year. So it's good to push him, I think, at this point. At least these guys should be able to push him.
Yeah, it certainly ends the Hopkins era in Baltimore to have Lane and Surratt selected here. So we'll see how that works out. The other thing I asked a question about was because I was noticing a lot of pre-snap defensive chatter. Now, part of this is we're there. The media is there. No fans are there. And the players, I don't remember if it was 18 or 22 on the field because it's a run drill. So sometimes it's a 9-on-9 when you do a run drill. You don't have the wide receivers on, but I think there might have been 11. Only three guys were even wearing helmets. Okay, why does that matter? Well, first of all, obviously it's a low intensity drill. They're not trying to hit each other with no helmets on. But second of all, it increases the amount of noise that you hear from the players. And so the quarterback and two inside linebackers were wearing helmets, but there's a ton of pre-snap chatter. It was very loud. And I asked him a question at the podium, and he addressed it, and he said, you know, we want to be the loudest defense in NFL history, basically, the loudest, most obnoxious, right? And that ended up being what everybody quoted from the
great question, Ken. That was the takeaway of the presser for sure. And I'm happy to hear it. I really like the mentality Minter's bringing to this team. I was a fan of the Billick, you know, grew up and became a diehard Ravens fan during the Billick era, and they were certainly loud and obnoxious, you know, mm-hmm. with Shannon Sharp telling Tennessee whatever they said, we said it, and all that kind of stuff. I like that attitude. I'm very pleased by everything I've seen from Minter so far. Final question before we move on. Anybody look good just off the hoof? Obviously, you're not really gaining too much, but just build first off the bus guys, maybe the edge rusher out of Texas, I thought, or, you know, because you had eyes on him personally.
Okay, so here's the issue with that. We have 40 minutes roughly on the field before they yank us off and take us inside, and then you wait for about another hour for the podium stuff to start, a little more than an hour, in fact. And so you don't get a lot of time. And this is like what it is during the season when they're having an install day and the media is there for 30 minutes of usually special teams and the early stuff on. A lot of that was calisthenics, you know, and so you had calisthenics, run drills, calisthenics to start camp. That's not a lot for us to go on. And then we had, you know, a little bit of the quarterbacks throwing, and I went over to the other field for that. I happened to be on that field that was also Jacoby Lane and Surratt were running some routes, and that was good too. But there's just not a lot to notice is what I'd say. Right. You know, I was so far away from the punters, there's nothing I could tell you, not even possibly about, you know, what was going on with the punters, for example, and Randy Brown and talking to the kicker or anything like that. And I wasn't on the side with the defense to really take in what Ethan Burke was doing. Although, you know, I'm interested too. I'm
just looking like from a physique standpoint, everybody stood out. Cause obviously there's not a whole lot to glean from the availability.
Yeah. You know what? The guys I would have liked to look at from a physique standpoint would have been the offensive linemen and see who looks like have a vertical build, or to misjudge anyone from looking at tape or whatever in terms of how much sand in the pants they have for being a gourd. But I didn't really do that. And you know, he spent so much time. I'm not trying to make excuses, but it's a chaotic day. You have a roster that includes 30 players that are UDFAs plus some additional ones that are there. And then you don't have a roster of a bunch of other players who were there on tryouts. And you're having to kind of make your roster, and you see a number of games, number 95 is here, kind of thing. And it's just, it's very difficult to even get through that process within 40 minutes. And then to make additional observations, you know, I do what I can.
Well, we still have some more practice to go, but it does seem like Minter might be a little bit closer to the vest than Harbaugh was. I know somebody asked him about injuries, and he said, we'll talk about that later in the offseason, and gave like no comment. Yeah. And that's somewhere. And I know you've been big on that for a long time. That's probably music to your ears.
Well, I am big that if you're going to be asked about injuries, you either need to basically be open about it, which I'm not in favor of, or you need to be my only comment is no comment. That's the, you can't just try and be the good guy and say, yeah, I think he's going to be back this week. I'm really excited. You know, kind of don't shut the hell up. There's no reason the opponent needs to know that.
Right. I like that. No comment. Yeah. The way to go.
That is the ultimate. If you want to avoid insider trading and you're working on merger work, that's you have to walk that line. No. All right. Let's talk the mailbag because we got one question here. It's from Instant Classic. It was actually just a comment that was in response to Scottish Ravens identifying Loop as the team's biggest area of concern. Okay. He said, I don't think Loop did anything last year that warrants not having a kicking competition in camp. I don't think the miss in the last game of the season disqualifies him, but I also don't think he should be immune from a real competition either. What's your feeling on that?
I do think he should be in competition. I think everybody that's not an established starter, multi-year starter, should be in competition. You know, I don't think Josh Cuevas should be penciled in as on the 53 roster. He should have to compete. I apply that to the punter. I apply that to everywhere. He had a pretty good year. We haven't seen how he performs under pressure necessarily, because I think the miss was maybe one of the only pressure kicks of the season for him. So, and he could get the yips. He's probably been, you know, thinking about that all offseason. So I would like to see competition. Doesn't have to be a big name guy or somebody established, but somebody to push him a little bit. And I think they did sign the UDFA. I guess it was a tryout, so they haven't signed him. So I guess he is the only kicker on the roster. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of all the really big kicks that the Ravens have ever missed. And I think there's really only maybe three that were not Tucker and Stover, who get a bet pass for having a million kicks in their careers. So absolutely. Obviously they're going to miss a couple of big ones. So Tucker missed the big one against the Saints on the extra point. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first extra points he'd ever missed, and he missed it to lose a football game. And Stover had certainly a miss or two over his career that cost the Ravens a game. But I think there's only really three kicks in Ravens history that I can recall. And if you're out there and you're listening, please hit us up in the comments in terms of what else there would be that would be kicks that were missed or big for the Ravens. Steven Hauschka in 2009 at Minnesota missed a kick to win the game. It was a 33-31 game, I think, at the time. So that would actually not an overtime situation or anything. That was for the win. You have Loop in this last year, and Cundiff in the AFC Championship. And I'm trying to think, I'm stretching my mind for any other kick that was missed to lose a football game other than, you know, the ones that might have been Stover or Tucker, who had, you know, lots of such opportunities.
None come to mind. I mean, how many kickers have they had in team history? Stover was around forever, and so was Tucker. Yeah. And those are both Ring of Honor types, at least depending how you feel about Tucker's off the field. The Ravens are spoiled by this excellence of both of those two. Yep. What, Stover, then Hauschka, then Cundiff, then Tucker, right?
Yeah, they had 1, 2, 3 years between Stover and Tucker. And that was a little bit of a turbulent time. They had some guys who, with Hauschka and Cundiff, each missing a big kick during that time. Yeah, and then they had a Loop since. But you're right, there hasn't been a lot of opportunities. It's only been four seasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Randy Brown has created all these great kickers for other teams by having them through our camp. And, you know, that's enough of a reason to have a kicking competition is, what if the guy, you know, gets real hot in the preseason and then all of a sudden somebody offers you a fifth-round pick for him, like happened with Kari Bedvick?
Yeah. And it was the other guy that went to the Saints.
Lutz.
Lutz, that's the one. Yeah.
And Graham Gano went on, had a big career. Hauschka went on, was one of the most accurate kickers of all time after he left the Ravens. So anyway, great group of kickers, certainly.
For sure. All right, Brown is a special coach for sure.
Always a pleasure talking football with you. I'll tell folks where they can talk football with you online, first of all, and then tell me about any adventure you have going on.
Yeah, pleasure is mine, Ken. I am online at Vasilis Lerikos, VasilisLerikos. I am working on a venture right now. I have it all from the table. I'm waiting to hear back. I pulled off of a different one. But this stuff's all kind of confidential, so I can't divulge, at least on air. So, yeah. Okay.
All right. Fair enough. Great to hear. We'll if you have another restaurant gig, and I assume that's what it is because you often do, then we'll undoubtedly talk more about that in the future. Other folks out there, really make use of hashtag film study mailbag. I'll get your question to the appropriate point, including doing a short video myself, having you on a short. If you'd like to do that, this is the perfect time of year to do it. If you are a person who really wants to be included in the expectation series, I'm sending out invites for that over the next few days, and they'll be recorded all prior to camp and probably played all prior to camp as well. That looks at two players, one offense and one defense. It projects forward to what sort of year do you expect them to have in 2026. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next time on Friday Morning GM.
Thank you.